Elysee. You? How so? Come on, Aurore. Let's not play dumb. No, I'm serious. That bill or the work I do with Riviere has nothing to do with our friendship, so I don't see how it could have landed you in trouble. Well, not trouble as such. But I did just get a call from Steph. She asked for your number, by the way, so expect a call. I look forward to it already. How are you feeling today? Camille asked. I'm too busy to suffer much from Vivienne withdrawal symptoms, so pretty good. How are you? Camille sighed. I'm constantly having to remind myself that this is the 21st century. If some of my colleagues got their way, we'd go a few decades back to when a woman's place was considered to be in the kitchen. I wonder how those colleagues feel about sperm donations being used by lesbian couples. Aurore chuckled. They should listen to your show. I'm serious, Aurore. The world would be a much better place if everyone listened to your show. A little sex positivity never killed anyone after all. You do realize that the insecure douchebag giving you a hard time is probably not getting any affection whatsoever. Sexually fulfilled people don't generally behave the way he does. Oh, please. Don't put the image in my head of him doing anything remotely sexual. Camille winced. That's the whole point, though. That image in your head is probably the extent of what he's getting. Which is nothing. Aurore giggled. Oh, I have a call waiting. Could it be Mademoiselle Matisse? Take it. I have to go anyway. And keep me posted. Will do. Camille put her phone down and pondered what Aurore had just said. Then she put a halt to her thoughts, because she'd given Duflo way too much of her mental energy already. But it did make her understand how Dominique must feel all the time. Constantly under attack from men who didn't think she was up to the job, simply because she was a woman. Men who generally believed that a woman was incapable of being a good president. Men because of whom women like Dominique, and Camille in her own position, had to work twice as hard to prove that they could do it, on top of dealing with their sexist remarks and envy. In Dominique's case, there were two other women after her job as well, which, truth be told, could be just as challenging, if not more so. But at least when women battled for the same spot, they started from a more level playing field, and with the knowledge that even if things did get dirty, no party would be condescended to and considered the weaker sex. Camille liked Anne Riviere, but her allegiance would always lie with Dominique Laroche. She checked the time. 5 more minutes until her meeting. Maybe she could sneak in a quick call to Zoya to get all of this off her mind and fill it with the most joyous, beautiful thing to have come into her life. Her love for another woman. Zoya. Come here. Zoya said as soon as Camille walked through the door. I missed you. They'd seen each other that morning, and they'd spoken on the phone. Yet Zoya meant it from the bottom of her heart. Perhaps because when they were still doing long distance, she missed Camille so much sometimes it cut off the air in her lungs. That memory didn't serve as a way to put a day with that Camille in perspective. Instead, it seemed to only increase Zoya's desire to hold Camille near. I must suffer from post-long-distance relationship stress syndrome, she'd once said after just moving to Paris. She'd clung to Camille, not allowing her to leave their bed to go to work. It's a serious medical condition that you can't just ignore. This made her think of what Steph had said the other night, before Camille had arrived with Aurore about seeing a counselor. Right at that very moment, Zoya didn't suffer from homesickness at all, but from the exact opposite, from the feeling that got her here in the first place. An overwhelming emotion that would have her denounce her home country for the rest of her life. That would have her deny her roots, her friends, her culture, and abandon it all for a life next to this gorgeous woman, drinking the best French wines and eating the most buttery croissants. But it was a constant back and forth between those two states of mind that was beginning to do Zoya's head in. And so she remembered those other words Steph had spoken, Camille will understand. Talk to her. But when Camille walked in the door all scrumptious looking like that, her hair a little disheveled and her clothes a bit wrinkled from a day's work, her attitude relaxed, her eyes saying how happy she was to come home to a house with Zoya in it. Zoya couldn't possibly start a talk like that. She needed to do something else instead, like press her lips to the delicious slope of Camille's breast and tear those crumpled clothes off her and do what they hadn't been able to do while they were 10,000 miles apart. Luxuriate in the simple sensation of touching each other's skin. "I missed you too, my love," Camille said, and gave Zoya a lopsided smile. One which said that, yes, she wanted Zoya in that moment too. Dinner could wait. Another hunger needed to be stilled first. Zoya pulled Camille close and kissed her on the lips. Oh, those soft, warm lips. Zoya would do anything to feel those lips on hers every single day for the rest of her life. In fact, she had done everything. She'd given up her life in Sydney, including her highly regarded job as a host of the Zoya Das show. She'd given it all up for love, and when Camille's lips touched hers like that, instantly opening and letting Zoya's tongue in, she knew it had been worth it. Every last doubt was squashed. Paris was where she belonged. Before they even reached the bedroom, climbing the stairs half clinging to each other, they'd started getting each other's clothes off. The hunger was too big. The fire of love burned too brightly in their bellies. Zoya needed Camille to yield at her fingers, to give herself up to her touch as soon as possible. They fell onto the bed and took a moment to breathe, to face each other and look each other in the eye. Camille brought a hand to Zoya's cheek and caressed it gently. "Tu es si belle," she said. And Zoya's French might not have improved much yet, but she understood. And she knew then that to Camille, she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Zoya kissed Camille again and again, their tongues meeting in that delicate dance. Camille pushed Zoya onto her back and maneuvered herself on top. She liked to do that, Zoya had learned since she moved to France. It had become more pronounced as her stay here had lengthened. Camille claiming dominance. Camille giving her shoulder a gentle push the way she was doing now. Most of the time Zoya let her, as long as once in a while she could surprise Camille and pin her arms to the mattress. As long as she got her turn. Zoya's jeans were already open, and all Camille had to do was tug them down, get them off her legs and fling them somewhere into the half-light of the room. After she had done so, she climbed back and gazed down at Zoya with her sparkly green eyes. Zoya's lips loosened into a smile. She could never help it when Camille looked at her like that, so full of love and passion and intent. Camille dragged a finger over Zoya's panties while watching her face. She let her finger skate up and down over the flimsy fabric, and Zoya felt Camille's touch there shudder all the way into her bones. That was how much Camille was part of her now. How much their love had left its mark on her body, her synapses, her soul. "Please." Zoya knew very well how much Camille enjoyed this bit. Zoya hankering for more of her, losing her patience and pushing down her own panties. Zoya squirmed out of her underwear and spread her legs wide. Her blouse lay splayed open to the sides, her nipples strained against her bra. Thankfully, Camille brought her finger back to where it was before, and this time there was no fabric in the way, and the sensation of its skating motion against Zoya's pussy lips was amplified a thousandfold. Camille circled her finger around Zoya's clit, and it felt good, but it was also too slow, too taunting. Zoya would be damned if she begged Camille again. This was the kind of patience she could exercise because it was brief and delicious. Kami kept her gaze on Zoya's. Her eyes narrowed as she let her finger slide down as it halted at the entrance of Zoya's pussy. Then it slipped in, and Zoya felt like she had been admitted to the gates of heaven. Her body reacted to the insertion of Kami's finger with hospitality and ever-increasing desire. Zoya would often study Kami's slender, strong fingers. She would take them in her hands, the paleness of them contrasting with the golden color of hers, and relish that she could touch these instruments of pleasure. Those digits that gave her so much joy behind closed doors whenever they were together. Seeing them always gave her a secret moment of delight. Now those fingers were working their magic on her, operating in tandem with Kami's glance on her, with the love that shone from it. 5 months of living together had already been long enough to establish a pattern for quickies like this. For times when Kami's nearness made her cheeks flush with instant lust that had to be quenched. Because why wouldn't they? They were here together. It had been the very point of it all. Zoya knew that soon Kami would avert her eyes, but only because her gaze was traveling elsewhere. She knew it as she knew the rhythm of Kami's fingers as they moved inside of her. Still only one now, but soon as her head ducked down, she would add another. To find such familiarity in something as exciting as sex was a great relief to Zoya. It made her feel more at home. It made living in Paris all about the woman and not about the place. Kami kissed her cheek as she thrust upwards, then retreated, and added another finger. Kami's gaze remained on Zoya's as she fucked her more insistently. She was going off plan. Maybe she needed to see Zoya's face. Zoya sure was happy to see hers, in between closing her eyes for a second every time a shudder of pleasure seized her. And this, too, was comforting. To see Kami's face there every time she opened her eyes. To know she would always be there. Zoya wanted more and she bucked up her hips, hoping Kami would catch her drift. She knew she would. That was the one advantage of starting a new relationship while miles apart. Having to spell out things more so their meaning could be understood across the distance. Kami added another finger and Zoya gazed at her strong arm. Her muscles flexed, a sight that never failed to arouse Zoya. The subtle strength of a woman. It was all on display in what Kami was doing to her. Then, at last, Kami did avert her gaze. Her face was no longer there when Zoya next opened her eyes. Zoya felt Kami's tongue against her clit. The gentle flick of it stood in stark contrast to the power with which her fingers were claiming Zoya, demanding pleasure. Zoya's muscles turned to molten wax. The fire in her belly burst open and spread all the way to her fingertips. A soft lick of Kami's tongue was all it took to catapult her into the next dimension, onto that cloud of climax where all thought disappeared and gave way to ecstasy. By the time Zoya had descended from her imaginary cloud, a hint of a tear breaking in the corner of her eye, Kami had draped half her body over hers and softly pecked her on the cheek. She curved an arm underneath Kami's neck and drew her close, inhaling the scent of her hair, kissing her wherever she could. This would do to squash her homesickness for a good long while. Oro. For me, this is not about politics. Aura repeated the words in her head like a mantra as she entered the grand gates of the Élysée. Of course, being invited to the Élysée made it all about politics. It was Stephanie Matisse's way of intimidating her. When Aura had taken the call from Steph, she had not expected an invitation, more of a scolding. But here she strode up the marble staircase, trying to not let the luster of the place impress her too much. Because she had an agenda to defend. Nothing was more important than the bill passing. Even though her being here was a first step of being used as a political pawn she didn't want to be. But what should she have done? Declined Steph's invitation? Anne Riviere had been skeptical when Aurore had told her about it, especially because the same invitation had not been extended to the député, only to her advisor. But it was just a meeting. It was better to keep Riviere out of it at this stage, because unlike Aurore, she did have political skin in the game. Aurore was asked to take a seat just outside of, she guessed, President Laroche's secretary's office. The woman looked as though she could have availed of France's early retirement scheme quite a few years ago, with her gray hair pinned meticulously to the top of her head. She peered over her glasses at Aurore every few minutes, as though making sure she wasn't up to any mischief. Aurore heard a quick tap-tap of footfalls approach. She straightened her posture. Two women walked in her direction. She recognized Steph. The other one looked vaguely familiar.
Aurore, so good of you to come.
Steph greeted her as though she were an old friend.
This is Solange Garceau, chief of staff to the president.
Ah, yes, of course. The tight set of the mouth. The meticulously styled back blonde hair. Aurore had seen her on television a few times during the presidential campaign, but Solange had disappeared behind the curtains of power swiftly once Laroche had been elected. Aurore knew her by reputation, however. She looked forward to measuring what she had heard about Solange against reality. She held out her hand, and Solange clasped it in a firm but damp grip. Aurore shot her the widest smile she had. Oh, this was going to be fun. The sheer level of uptightness of this woman tickled her mischievous streak. No matter the difference between their political stance, Aurore wanted for Solange to smile at least once during their meeting. One smile. It would take some warming up, she could already see that. But Aurore liked a challenge. Sometimes a little too much. Let's go in there. Steph pointed at a door. Aurore followed them, taking in the size of Solange's heels. Christ almighty. She looked like the type who never took them off, even at home in the evening, who might even take pleasure in torturing her feet all day long. Coffee? Tea? Steph offered, showing herself a much more welcoming host than Aurore had expected. Solange remained silent and just sat down. I'm fine, thanks. Was this meeting formal or informal? Steph's presence hinted at the latter, Solange's at a very strict formality. Or were they trying to mess with her head? Aurore shook the thought off her. She had come here to listen, and to make sure that, one way or another, the bill passed. Once they were all seated, Steph said,
I listened to a few back episodes of your radio show. I'm a fan.
Thank you. Aurore glanced from Steph to Solange, whose face remained expressionless.
You're probably wondering why I asked you here.
She nodded her head at Solange.
And why Dominique's chief of staff is here.
I am. Aurore tried to relax her muscles.
Solange is basically my nanny in this meeting. She's here to make sure I don't speak out of turn.
Still, nothing from Solange. Aurore wondered about her relationship with Steph. She made a mental note to Google Solange Garceau later. She could only guess she made up for with intelligence what she lacked in social graces. How else could she hold such a high function? Steph shot Solange a grin.
Of course, Solange also knows things I don't know. I wouldn't want to sell her short.
Of course. Aurore smiled and let her gaze linger on Solange. She did look rather nanny-like the way she sat there. One leg arranged stiffly over the other, her notepad clasped to her chest behind folded arms. The body language of Solange Garceau. Aurore would love to dedicate a segment of her radio show to that. When does it crack? Does it ever? She would have to make that show solely for herself, of course. Solange was piquing her interest in the most peculiar way.
Does Solange speak, or...
Aurore couldn't help herself. I'm not here to speak. I'm here to observe.
Solange had a surprisingly pleasant voice, low and crisp, like a news anchor's.
Got it.
Aurore could easily imagine the fireworks between this stern woman and Steph's much more relaxed inclinations. Solange must have nearly had a heart attack when news broke about her candidate and Steph. She looked as though she was still recovering. "So," Steph began, "I would like to begin by stating, for the record, that you and I are not so different, Aurore. We want the same things. We're simply in different camps."
"I would like to state that for me, this is not political. I mean, I'm a socialist, make no mistake about that. But for me, it's all about the bill. About equality, no matter a person's sexual orientation."
"The Élysée agrees with you on that,"
Steph said.
Solange cleared her throat. "Well, Dominique and I agree with you on that. We want this bill to pass.
But with as little political damage to the president as possible," Solange added. "I understand.
I understand you can't tell us more about Anne Riviere's plans, but we would very much like this to be clean. No colluding between party factions. No secret cross-party scheming to make Dominique look weak.
I'm not a political advisor. I counsel Anne on ethical and societal issues. If you're looking for political guarantees, you've come to the wrong person."
"As soon as you advise a politician," Solange said, "you are a political advisor. It really can't be more simple than that."
Aurore pinned her gaze on Solange.
So that was what she was here for, to try and destabilize her. She didn't know Aurore very well then, although she had probably done her homework on Aurore. Some character traits couldn't possibly be gleaned from a Wikipedia page or a Marie Claire interview.
"What is it that you really want from me, Steph?" Aurore asked.
Steph stroked her chin, then spoke. "Is there any way we can work together on this without having to fight it out through snappy soundbites on television? Without making this into a battle that will make the media salivate?"
"You tell me. You're the one saying the president wants this bill to pass. Riviere introduced it. All the president has to do is instruct the MLR deputies to vote for it. Now that is as simple as it can get."
She eyed Solange, who didn't move a muscle.
"Come on, Aurore. You know it's the opposite of simple for Dominique. Despite being president, she's still a divisive figure in the party."
Another bout of throat clearing from Solange.
"Oh, please, Solange." Steph turned to her. "Aurore and I are acquaintances. I can say things like that to her in private. I wasn't speaking on behalf of the Élysée this time."
"I'm only doing this to protect you, Stephanie. Trust me on this. I always have Dominique's and your best interests at heart."
Steph shook her head.
"No, you don't. Not mine, anyway."
Solange sighed but didn't reply.
"I can set up a meeting between Anne and the president," Aurore said.
"We don't need you to set up meetings for the president."
Impatience grew in Solange's voice.
"If the president wants to talk to Madame Riviere, she will summon her to the Élysée."
Aurore caught Steph rolling her eyes.
"You know what? This is going nowhere. This meeting is over."
Steph rose.
"I'll walk you out, Aurore."
She turned to Solange.
"I'm sure you have much better things to do than babysit me on this walk." "I swear to you, that woman drives me crazy,"
Steph said as soon as Solange was out of earshot.
"I can easily see that."
They walked through the surprisingly silent corridors of the Élysée.
"I didn't mean to antagonize you. I'm well aware of Dominique's political predicament, and I would really love to help. As I said, the only thing that matters to me is the bill."
"As you just witnessed, my hands are pretty tied.
Solange will surely remind me next time I see her that I'm not the one with a mandate given to her by the public. Dominique is." Steph heaved a sigh.
"But some ultra-conservative, old-fashioned MLR fart is going to use this to challenge Dominique to primaries. And that's even before she has to go out and battle the likes of Riviere and Maréchal. I would really like to spare her from that."
"And yourself?"
"Sorry?"
"Do you have time to grab a coffee sometime? Maybe we can have a more informal chat. Not about the bill, of course. Not without the nanny."
She briefly touched her hand to Steph's shoulder.
"She's quite something."
"You might have noticed I'm not Solange's favorite person."
"She's probably just jealous because you get to share the president's bed and she only gets to talk shop with her."
Steph huffed out a chuckle, God, no. Solange is one of those rare human beings who do not suffer from emotions. She's all business, all the time. I really don't think that's possible.
An idea popped into Aurore's head, an idea she was not ready to share with Steph.
To answer your question, I would love to have coffee with you. It will need to be somewhere private, though, Steph said.
Come to my place, Aurore offered.
It's not as simple as that. Nothing is anymore, it seems.
Steph managed a weak smile.
If a pap snaps me going to Aurore Sauve's house, imagine the headline in Le Matin the next day. First lady meets scandalous sex expert,
Aurore said between giggles. The only way to deal with absurdity at this scale was to laugh at it.
I'll figure something out, Steph said.
Thank you for inviting me, Steph. The meeting might not have been all we hoped for, but I appreciate the gesture.
She paused to smile.
If Solange were here, I'm sure she would clear her throat and say something along the lines of politics being all about gestures. I mean, I may have to stand for office myself, having become such a politician all of a sudden.
She touched Steph's arm again, wanting to convey her sympathy for the First Lady and her curtailed freedoms.
She means well. If only she could find a better way of going about it.
I'm sure in the end, we all mean well.
But in the meantime, the game of politics needs to be played, Steph said wistfully.
Dominique. How did it go with, what's her name? Dominique racked her brain. So many names. So little space in her mind to remember them.
Aurore Sauve, Solange said.
Nothing really happened. I mean, she paused. It's okay, Solange. Tell me what Stephanie said.
In my opinion, she went too far, spoke out of turn. She was quite rude to me, but that's fine. Nothing I'm not used to. The meeting ended not long after that. Stephanie displayed no desire to talk any further with Madame Sauve while I was present.
Solange usually kept her hostile feelings for Steph under wraps. But it wasn't in Dominique's job description to make her chief of staff, who hadn't met Steph under the best of circumstances and Steph get along. They were both adults and could figure out their grievances between themselves. Or not. As long as she didn't have to deal with any of it. She had bigger fish to fry. When Dominique didn't fill the silence, Solange said,
We have to come up with a plan of action soon. We still haven't reacted to the news of the bill. We should do so sooner rather than later.
I know. I was hoping this meeting would have provided some inspiration. My father has been on my case to call a party meeting to define our stance. Some old crocodiles are getting restless, lest a lesbian woman might acquire the right to get pregnant in her own country. I swear to you, Solange, sometimes I think I'm in the wrong party.
Dominique quickly followed up with a chuckle. These were things best not said out loud, especially to a staunch MLR loyalist like Solange.
Was there anything else? Solange said matter-of-factly.
Yes. Dominique gave in to a spur-of-the-moment idea. There is, actually. The next free evening I have, you should come to dinner. You, Steph, and I will share a good bottle of wine. I think it will do all three of us a world of good.
Yes, Madam President.
Solange said it as though she had just been demoted to the lowest post in the Élysée.
Only if you feel like it, of course,
Dominique goaded her. If only she knew what she and Steph had been saying behind her back.
She really shouldn't talk about her chief of staff like that, even if it was all just said in jest.
Of course.
Solange turned for the door. They both knew she had no choice in the matter. As she watched Solange exit her office, Dominique relished the only tiny abuse of power she would ever allow herself. Coaxing Solange Garceau out of her shell, if only a tiny fraction.
You got on the wrong side of Solange again, Dominique said as she unhooked her earrings. In the reflection of the mirror, she glanced at Steph, who was already in bed.
She was staring at her phone intently. What else is new?
I invited her to dinner.
This made Steph look up from her phone.
When?
One of these days. We all have to eat, no matter how busy we get.
Are you expecting me to be at this dinner?
Steph put her phone away and caught Dominique's glance in the mirror.
Oh, yes. As your president, I command you.
Steph chuckled.
What a night of relaxed fun and games that will be.
She tilted her head and smiled at Dominique.
Will we or will we not find out something about Solange Garceau's closely guarded private life? Does she have a private life? Or does she sleep in some dark, quiet corner of the Élysée? Is she perhaps in the building right now?
Dominique turned and walked over to the bed.
We wouldn't be in the Élysée if it weren't for Solange.
Nor would Solange be here if it weren't for you.
Steph held out her hand. Ah, the comfort of the outstretched hand after Dominique came home in the evening, when she walked into this bedroom and found Steph waiting for her, sometimes sleeping, but being a night owl, usually awake and up for a chat and a cuddle.
I'm not so sure of that.
What are you saying? That you need her more than she needs you?
She's my secret weapon.
And I believed that was me.
Steph tugged at Dominique's hand and pulled her close.
You are my one true love. My scandalous lesbian lover. My incredibly hot, soon-to-be wife.
Dominique straddled Steph and looked her in the eye.
If I should be so lucky. Just for my information, if we were ever to get married, would Solange be your witness?
Dominique chuckled.
No, chérie.
Because that would be a surefire way of making you say no just when I got you as far as the altar.
She leaned in to kiss Steph on the lips.
Those lips.
When Dominique allowed herself a moment of relaxation during her busy days, closed her eyes and let random thoughts flood her mind. Steph's lips and the delightful sensation of a kiss were often one of them. Steph withdrew from the kiss. Dominique tried to catch her lips again, but Steph wouldn't let her.
I just had an idea, Steph said.
Is that why you don't want to kiss me anymore?
Dominique stole a quick peck on the cheek.
I was reading Orosov's Wikipedia page. She does so much more than host a weekly radio show about the broadest sex-related topics.
Clearly, she's a socialist activist advising Anne Riviere.
Yes. But on top of that, she was awarded an Order of Merit medal for her work in sexual health education. She has written 2 books and participated in many advisory committees on STD prevention.
Surely she must have gained that award when the socialists were in power.
Oh, of course. The MLR has to maintain its chaste and prudish image at all times, of course.
What was your idea? And why are you thinking about Orosov when I'm kissing you?
Dominique started unbuttoning her blouse.
When Solange comes to dinner, we should invite Oro as well.
Why?
I think it could be very interesting.
Dominique sat up a little straighter.
You want to invite a socialist? An advisor of the very deputé gunning for my job, no less, to dinner at the Élysée?
It would be a private dinner. Party politics would have nothing to do with it.
That's very sweet and naive of you, chérie.
Dominique tried hard not to sound condescending.
This isn't the previous century, babe. Cross-party cooperation doesn't have to be so hidden anymore.
What are you really trying to accomplish?
Steph was anything but naive, despite what Dominique had just said.
Do you trust me?
Steph asked. When she asked it like that, looking up at Dominique with that irresistible glint in her eye, Dominique could only nod. After the day she'd had, she had no more resistance left anyway. Not that she ever had a lot when it came to Stephanie Matisse.
I'm just following my instinct.
Your instinct is what got you here, trapped between my legs.
Dominique leaned in again, let her lips hover next to Steph's ear.
There's nowhere else I'd rather be.
Steph pulled her close and let her tongue slip inside Dominique's mouth. Steph.
Why is Orosov coming here?
Claire asked.
Because frankly, I don't know where else to meet her without having a big brouhaha made about it,
Steph said.
Fair enough. Are you discussing the bill?
Claire leaned against the doorframe. She looked good, as though being engaged to be married was agreeing with her. Maybe Steph should quiz her about that, try to find out what the prospect of marriage really did to a person. But these days, it was a small miracle to not have Claire talk about her upcoming nuptials and to engage her in a conversation about anything else. So Steph held her tongue.
Not necessarily. I will be inviting her to dinner at the Élysée, however.
Oh, really? To what does she owe that honor?
Do I detect a hint of jealousy? We'll have the founding partners of Barbier and Cyr, significant others included, over again soon, I promise.
It has been a while, Steph. Sometimes it feels as though your new status makes you forget about your old friends.
Claire said it with a smile on her face. Steph chuckled at the comment.
I actually really like her. Solange will be coming to dinner as well, and Oro knows how to get under her skin. I need her by my side. I can't solely count on myself or Dominique to break the ice when the Ice Queen visits our private quarters.
Is Solange still giving you a hard time?
She's just...
Steph picked her words carefully.
Rather disrespectful to me. As if the only person she respects is Dominique. I don't know. Sometimes I think I have her figured out. That she's this robotic lackey sent by the party to keep an eye on Dominique. But Dominique would never accept that. She has a lot of mutual respect for Solange, and I'm caught somewhere in the middle, left not knowing what to think of her most of the time.
If you ask me, Solange needs to get a load off.
Claire waggled her eyebrows.
You know what I mean?
Steph grinned.
Let's not go there.
Then Steph's phone rang and Oro's arrival was announced.
Oro laughed that hearty laugh of hers.
Me? She said between chuckles. You want me to have dinner with you, the president and her uptight chief of staff, because truly, Madame Garceau gives a whole new meaning to the word uptight. A broomstick up her backside doesn't even begin to describe it.
Steph nodded. It was difficult not to get caught up in Aurore's infectious glee. Perhaps that was what drew Steph to her so much, her utter lack of self-consciousness. The breath of fresh air she represented in Steph's hyper-controlled life.
I think it's a ludicrous idea, but I won't say no, of course.
Her voice lowered in pitch. Looks like I'm becoming an Élysée regular. She fixed her dark, sparkling gaze on Steph.
Should I check the mail for an invitation embossed in gold?
Steph liked her irreverence most of all. And the newness of her. Apart from Zoya, she hadn't made a new friend in ages. Perhaps if Solange had been a different kind of person, Steph could have befriended her after moving into the Élysée. But she and Solange would never be friends, no matter how much Dominique wanted them to get along.
Thank you. And no, this verbal invitation is all you're getting.
How is one supposed to dress for such a lavish occasion?
I'll be wearing something like this.
Steph waved her hand over her blazer.
Solange will be wearing her usual black and white penguin uniform. I've never seen the merest hint of color on her. Dominique probably won't notice what you're wearing. Her priorities have somewhat shifted away from the sartorial. She wears a variation on the same thing every day.
But she wears it well.
Steph smiled.
It used to be different. She used to fret over what to wear, until she realized that none of her male predecessors ever spent any energy on futile things like that. Now she doesn't care anymore.
Sounds like the presidency has made her grow as a person.
The skin around Oro's eyes crinkled when she smiled. This was exactly why Steph wanted to have her over for dinner. This ability to speak her mind, no matter the subject or circumstances. Oro looked around Steph's office. Steph had been upgraded to a much larger, brighter space after becoming partner at the firm and First Lady.
Swanky digs. Surely beats a cozy coffee place.
This is as private as it's going to get for us, I'm afraid.
Oro nodded.
It's great to see your place of work.
She folded her features into a more serious expression.
I haven't had the opportunity to tell you before, but despite belonging to different parties, I greatly admire Dominique.
I heard you talk about her on your show. I'll never forget that image of her with her hand raised when the Assemblée voted for same-sex marriage. It might have shocked some, but I believe it's what got her elected in the end. In that moment, she bridged the divide between left and right, which is much easier to do when you're not president. What about you, Steph? I watched that interview Zoya did with you again. I'd seen it before when it came out, but I looked at it with different eyes this time. I could read between the lines more. What did you see when you watched it this time?
Aurore leaned back in her seat.
Now that I met you, and I sense what kind of person you are, I can so easily guess all the things you didn't say in that interview. It makes me wonder how Dominique reacted to it.
Christ. Steph hadn't felt so understood since the first few sessions with Marion, her counselor. You and me both.
How do you mean?
In fact, this was beginning to feel more like a counseling session than coffee with a new friend. She's busy. We watched it together, but she must have gotten called away during or not long after, and we never really discussed it that much since.
Is it hard, being First Lady? Steph chuckled.
Are you trying to interview me again?
Aurore held up her hands.
I can't seem to help myself when I'm with you. I find you such a fascinating character. Therefore, you can't really blame me.
Steph wondered whether Aurore's obvious interest in her played a part in her instant liking of Aurore. Usually, anyone she met only showed interest in her more important partner. It had been the same with Zoya, who, being from Australia, hadn't been that starstruck when she'd met Dominique, and had shown equal enthusiasm towards her. Zoya, who had persuaded her to be interviewed. Not that Steph didn't get interview requests all the time, but Zoya's had been different. Truth be told, Steph knew that Zoya had stroked her ego just enough and in the right manner to get her to agree. A delicate balancing act few people succeeded in, because it couldn't be glaringly obvious nor too discreet. In the end, it boiled down to genuine interest, something Steph had always been good at detecting in people. Something Aurore was displaying now as well. In the spirit of recognizing this, Steph decided to give Aurore the most honest answer she could muster. Most of the time it's not hard because I get to be with the woman I love, which had been a journey in itself, meeting Dominique, realizing I had real feelings for her, deciding to give it a go and the fallout of that, the presidency. It has been far from easy, but definitely worth it. And no, I'm not a sucker for punishment or anything like that. But I do believe a journey is its own reward. Steph paused. Dominique changed me. Fundamentally so. For better or for worse, I don't know. I don't judge myself like that. But being with her is worth the step back I've had to take in my own career, even my own life. Because to me, it doesn't feel like a step back, as long as I feel like I'm walking in step with her. Does that make sense?
It does. She's lucky to have you.
The expression on Aurore's face was so open and compassionate, Steph liked her even more.
I look forward to having dinner with her and you. Not so much Solange, though. Oh no, actually, I look forward to that as well. After all, I've cracked tougher nuts.
Great.
A warm rush engulfed Steph's chest. She recognized it as the comforting glow of a budding friendship. Camille.
Aurore's been invited to the Élysée, Camille said. Dinner with the president.
She kept an eye on her granddaughter who was pestering her cat Iris.
That should take her mind off Vivienne.
Vivienne, Emma repeated.
Both Camille and Zoya broke out into a chuckle. They really had to mind what they said when Emma was around. The girl picked up on everything and loved to repeat the most unexpected words. Camille watched Iris escape Emma's clutches. She got up and opened the window so Iris could find some peace and quiet outside.
I should think so.
Emma looked a little forlorn now she no longer had Iris to annoy. She padded over to her grandmother. Camille opened her arms and picked her up. A jolt of pure love enveloped her. Emma settled into her lap and played with Camille's necklace.
I can't believe how well behaved this child is. Did you not just see her pull Iris's tail? I think my poor old cat would end up traumatized by the time Emma loses interest in her. It's only normal for her to be interested in a small furry animal. But yes, Orgrey must be hard for Iris, especially after already having to share her territory with me, that other intruder.
Zoya reached out a hand to Emma and stroked her cheek. When Emma arrived at their house, all other activities stopped and all attention was directed at her. Even though Florence kept telling Camille that Emma was not a child in constant need of attention because they refused to raise her that way.
I'm her grandmother, and she is, so far, my only grandchild. I can't look away when she does something cute. It's my job to marvel at her.
Mon Dieu, Flo had said while glancing at Zoya. And now there's two of you.
Emma had only been 1 month old when she'd first met Zoya. In her memory, Zoya would always have been there as part of her family's life. It was a heartwarming thought. The girl had taken to Zoya as well, who spoke to her in English.
Kangaroo, kangaroo, Zoya sang to Emma. When you come to Australia, I will take you to the zoo.
Cummy smiled. Before she'd left on that 2 month trip to Australia, ending with a few days in Sydney, where she had fallen head over heels for Zoya, she'd been so down in the dumps. And look at her now. On a Sunday afternoon like this, it was easy to forget about her worries at work. About any worry she'd ever had in her life, and she'd had many. Emma stretched out her arms, indicating she wanted Zoya to hold her. Camille gave the child a quick peck on the cheek and handed her over.
Don't teach her English with an Australian accent. Emma is a sophisticated French girl. She will not sound, what's the word again? Bogan?
Zoya held Emma so she could stand with her tiny feet on her knees.
Your grandmother is such a snob. Did you know that, Emma?
She said it with the thickest accent she could muster.
You might be French, but you won't become such a snob, will you? I'll make sure of that.
Bogan,
Emma repeated. Both Camille and Zoya burst out laughing. The joy such a tiny creature could bring. All she literally had to do was say a single word, and she had two grown women in stitches. After Florence and Matteau had picked up Emma, Camille and Zoya were lounging in the living room with a glass of wine. Camille had almost finished hers, while Zoya's was still near full.
If you're not going to drink that, I'll have it, Camille said.
Zoya fixed her dark gaze on Camille.
I'm savoring it. As in, drinking it slowly? Unlock some.
I'm just a faster savorer of wine than you.
It's because I'm French. I started drinking wine when I was barely this high.
She held up her hand just above the seat of the sofa.
So you've had plenty in your life. No need to gulp it down so fast anymore.
Camille examined Zoya's face.
Are you scolding me for drinking too much?
Zoya shook her head.
No, although I have noticed an increase in intake. She paused. Do you want to talk about it?
Camille sighed.
It's the Sunday evening dread.
She looked away from Zoya.
I wish I didn't have to go to work tomorrow.
She shook her head.
It's so frustrating because I've always enjoyed my job. I still do, but it makes me feel like a lesser woman to let a man get the better of me.
He's not getting the better of you, darling.
He is.
Camille looked into her wine glass.
The very fact that I'm talking about him on a Sunday evening means that he is. All that bullshit is taking away from my job satisfaction. I'm letting him do that to me. Just like so many women all over the world let men do things like this to them.
She scoffed.
In a way, it's Jean-Claude all over again. I sacrificed so much for him. What did he ever do for me?
You mustn't blame yourself.
Zoya scooted closer to Camille and put a hand on her arm.
What you're feeling is completely normal, but you should make an effort not to feel responsible for any of this. Because you're not. It's not you. It's him.
Easier said than done.
She glanced at Zoya's hand on her arm, then at her face. It helped.
You need to get him fired, just like you cut ties with your ex-husband and you found happiness again. You need to do the same with this DeFlo guy.
He's a good scientist. Doesn't matter how good it is. Being good at something doesn't excuse being an asshole. And being an asshole should be grounds enough for getting the sack. You need to keep a file of everything he says to you. Tiniest thing. Every look he gives, it makes you feel uncomfortable. Every time you notice he goes behind your back, prepare for war. Camille arched up her eyebrows. You definitely sound battle ready. I don't like it when someone messes with my woman. I don't like seeing you like this. I will fight him, but he's smart. He might be smart, but you're smarter. You're his boss after all. A job he didn't get because you're a woman, but because you're better at what you do than he is. Keep going. A smile is starting to break through Camille's gloom. I need some more. You're not only very intelligent, of course. Zoya shuffled a little closer still. Granted, there are a lot of smoking hot women in Paris, but you're the hottest of them all. She planted a kiss on the curve of Camille's neck. One look from you, and I'll melt all over. Another kiss right underneath Camille's earlobe. I'll move to the other side of the world for you. No ordinary woman could ever make me do that.
I love you.
Camille cupped Zoya's cheeks in her hand.
You are so good for me. The best thing ever.
Let's keep talking in cliches a little while longer. Zoya's voice had lowered in pitch.
I mean every word, Zoya.
Camille looked her in the eyes. Those dark, almost black eyes, which she could lose herself in so easily. As she did, she wondered if this was the true meaning of love. This kind of support. Someone who had your back in difficult times. Throughout her marriage to Jean-Claude, more often than not, Camille had felt like it was her against the world. She didn't feel like that any longer, now that she had Zoya by her side.
So do I.
Zoya drew her lips into a mischievous grin, then tilted her head and found Camille's ear.
And you make me come like nobody's business.
Zoya. Zoya glanced at the text message Steph had sent her. It contained the number of Marion Laval, her therapist. Steph had sent it a few days ago, but Zoya had ignored it. She needed to talk to Camille first, but she had enough on her plate at work with the caveman trying to steal her job. Besides, she would like to ask some more questions first. Not that she didn't know how counseling worked, but did this woman even speak sufficient English? She glanced at the clock. It was around 9 p.m. in Sydney. What she needed was a friendly face. Not just any friendly face. Someone who had known her for years. Someone who connected her with her past. But also someone who knew what it was like to leave your home country. She'd never previously believed Australia meant so much to her, yet she was caught in a rush of melancholic nostalgia every time she heard a tourist speak in an Australian accent on the street, or when she was reminded that it was now winter in Sydney, while for her it was summer. With a few mouse clicks, Zoya called her friend Caitlin James on FaceTime, because just hearing her voice wasn't enough. She had to see her face. Caitlin picked up after a few rings.
Hello, stranger.
For a split second, Zoya was overcome with joy at the sight of her friend, but she quickly regrouped. Caitlin was the kind of person who'd pick up on this in a heartbeat and turn it into a joke, and Zoya wasn't sure she could joke about how she felt. Not yet.
So good to see your face, Zoya said.
FaceTiming with someone in Australia reminded her of all the times the internet was all she and Camille had to communicate when they were living apart. Surely living with Camille and calling her friends, instead of the other way around, was an improvement.
You're not mad at me anymore for taking over the Zoya Dar show.
You will never have my elegance in class. But no, I'm all right with it now. The Caitlin James show is its own thing now.
Tell me all about your wonderful life in Paris,
Caitlin said.
I would so love to come and visit. But it's not easy when you have a weekly TV show and a partner always has somewhere to be. Jo's not home, but I'm sure she would send her love if she was, by the way.
That was the other thing about moving to a glamorous city like Paris. Everyone automatically assumed it was amazing. While they didn't know about the tiny grievances like having to drive on the other side of the road, or no one understanding what a flat white was. How's Joe? Zoe ignored the question about Paris. She needed some time to ponder whether she could confide in Caitlin about this.
She's doing great. We're living in happy domestic bliss.
A smile appeared on Caitlin's face.
Caitlin James has settled down. Who knew the day would ever come?
Oh, well, you know. I love her to pieces, so tell me about your gorgeous French woman then. Everything hunky-dory.
Camille is great.
She does have a few issues with a colleague at work after coming out. Some good old homophobia, but
she'll get through it.
Caitlin shook her head.
Let me know if you need me to come over and talk some sense into this person. While I'm there, maybe I can swing an interview with Dominique Laroche.
Zoya grinned. She'd been curious how long it would take Caitlin to bring up the president. Caitlin James didn't idolize many, but she had a huge soft spot for Dominique. There's no way you're getting there first. I'll be the first Australian journalist to interview her.
But you're doing paces on butter now, Zoya. You're a couple rungs too low in the correspondent ladder for such a high-profile interview.
You're forgetting about my connections. Stephanie Matisse and I are thick as thieves these days.
A slight exaggeration was allowed on long-distance internet calls.
While all I have is my reputation, Caitlin joked. Which should get me a foot in the door,
she paused.
How are you, Zoya? Is the job working out? You don't miss me too much.
I miss you incredibly, of course.
Zoya made it sound like a joke, but she meant it from the bottom of her heart.
What's my life without Caitlin James in it?
That's what I thought.
There was a sudden kindness in Caitlin's eyes. Maybe she missed Zoya as well.
The job is fine. It's quite relaxed compared to what I used to do. But it's good to get the lay of the land before I switch to a higher gear.
I was wondering what happened to your ambition.
Sometimes other things are more important than ambition.
Oh, yes. The love of a good woman. Don't tell anyone, but I agree. Your sacred safe with me.
Zoe knew Caitlin's softer side, even though she didn't show it very often.
Oh, I didn't quite catch that.
Caitlin's voice came through crackled, and the image of her face was distorted. Another nuisance when trying to communicate with people thousands of miles away. Just when you're getting into a conversation, the internet started acting up. It was an all too familiar occurrence for Zoya. A minute-long silence followed. Zoya clicked on the telephone icon a few times, and Caitlin flickered onto the screen, but then she was gone. Zoya inhaled, held her breath for a second, then exhaled deeply. It had been good to see Caitlin's face, even if only for such a short period of time. They hadn't exchanged a lot of information, but that wasn't always a requirement when chatting to a friend. Just knowing they were there, albeit 10,000 miles and a crappy internet connection away, was enough. For now. Aurore. Aurore smoothed a wrinkle in her blouse, then brushed a strand of stray hair from her face. A tingle rose in her stomach as a taxi drove up to the front gate of the Élysée. She had been here before, but this was different. This was private. Could dinner with the president ever be private? Speaking of, she'd never met the president before, a thought that amplified that tingle in her tummy. She also figured she wasn't Dominique Laroche's favorite person at the moment, nor Solange Garceau's. A quiet man in an immaculate suit guided her through the corridors to the private quarters, their footfalls the only sound. Aurore took advantage of the solemn atmosphere to think about what she'd found when she'd Googled Solange. Nothing. The woman was a complete mystery. Apart from the obvious, a similar background to Dominique, born and bred in the bosom of the MLR. Not a word about her private life anywhere. Either she was a master at hiding it, or she didn't have one. The man rapped his knuckles against a pair of double doors and waited stiffly until someone said,
"Entrez!"
Aurore was admitted to a quite normal, albeit rather bourgeois, lounge. She could picture Dominique living here, Stephanie, not so much. Steph walked into the room, followed by a fat ginger cat. She opened her arms wide and greeted Aurore heartily, as though she'd been waiting to exhale until she'd arrived. Dominique and Solange will be here.